You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and one of the co-hosts of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Two topics for today's show. The first one, obviously, the Pacers win over the Miami Heat. We'll break that down and discuss a lot of that. And then a second segment will be on the downhill effects of the Anthony Davis announcement that he wanted to be traded. Not just talking about trades the Pacers can make for Davis, but trades that could be related to the Pelicans for the Pacers, kind of the other parts that could affect the Pacers from Anthony Davis announcing he wanted to be traded out of New Orleans. But first, let's get right to it. The Pacers beat the Miami Heat 95-88. On one of probably their best, one of their best team performances, maybe not team, but top, you know, starting six performances of the season. You know, the first thing you notice, it's no coincidence that essentially Thad, Bojan, and DC played 34 more minutes. I would say that's way above their average minutes. I mean, that is, I know for a fact. Turner played 31. Part of that is him mixing in minutes with a bonus. But there was no coincidence that the starters basically each all played 30 more minutes, and they had to. I mean, the way the Pacers are set up now at Oladipo, they're essentially lacking a huge amount of depth, and McDermott didn't play the night, so that didn't help. But they're essentially like down to six, seven if you put, you know, seven quality players, eight if you really add McDermott, but really like six to seven quality players depending on a single night, depending on how Evans plays. And so you're going to have to rely on your veterans. And this is the thing. If they're going to not make a move, and they're going to go all in on, we have these veteran guys, we're going to let them ride and see what they can do, they're going to have to play them a lot. Like, they're not like, need to save Thaddeus Young for whatever future. I mean, not to be mean to him, but the team has no incentive of, like, that he's going to be on the team in 2 or 3 years, so they don't care how he looks when he's 33. You know, they don't care if they play him 38 minutes a night for the rest of the season, because they're not worried about his long-term, you know, outlook, I guess, because they're not worried about it. Same, really, I would say with Darren Collison the same way. Tyreek in a similar sense. Obviously, Tyreek only played 16. Part of that was the injury. We don't know how bad the back is. Coming back for the first time, he didn't obviously play great either. But so, I mean, that's the thing, is that they, if they're going to win these games, especially against teams that they should beat, like the Miami's, the mediocre NBA teams, they're going to have to ride their starters. I mean, they're going to have to play their starters a lot of minutes and hope that, one, the chemistry of the starting five, especially with Kojo, is good enough to hold the basically hold their own on the defensive end, and then that they have enough of a offensive power with those guys to get enough points scored. And tonight they did. Obviously, the number one shout-out for tonight's game was to Bojan, who had 31 points, who essentially was almost felt like he was unguardable at times. I don't know whether it's Miami's D was just not focused on him or whatnot, but essentially it seemed like Bojan a ton of times was slipping his defender and getting easy in-the-lane shots. I mean, he took a decent amount of, like, I say 15 to 18 footers that he just kept nailing. And he kind of, he pushed off the three-point line. He would shoot that shot, and he was okay with it. But a couple times, he just ended up right in front of the rim, especially early on, where he was just standing in front of the rim with a layup half the time. You know, I don't know how sustainable Bojan 31, per se, is. But, I mean, if the Pacers are going to win, he's going to have to be in the 20s, right? I mean, if he averages something like 20 points a game, or say between 20 and 22 the rest of the year, they probably have a legit shot at winning 10 to 15 games they have left of the, say, the 35 without Vic. If he's going to be, you know, his same self of 16 points a game, which is fine, which is good, when he's number two, it's probably not enough. And you could, you know, because when Bojan is playing well, it opens up this part of the offense for everybody else, in a sense. Because you have to guard him, because he is somewhat of a bigger dude. It forces guys that double-team him, and it forces defenders to kind of switch on him, leaving other guys opportunities, because, you know, that's what the Pacers were lacking. They're lacking a guy who a defense kind of feels like we have to, like, cater to him. And I don't know if Bojan can adjust. You know, I doubt there'll be a quick enough adjustment by teams in the league to be like, okay, Bojan's their best guy, we're going to double-team, so maybe he'll get a lot of points. But if he does, if they do adjust to it, I'm not sure how Bojan can handle the double-teams, but at least it would help everybody else out. You know, each night, you know, Bojan is probably the most consistent offensive player on this team, and that's why he has to be kind of that 20-point-a-game guy, I would say. You know, I was big on the Turner and Evans need to be that kind of guy, and I still think Turner, you know, is the best option to score 20 points a game. But Bojan, I mean, he's in Europe, he was able to be the, he knows what it's like to be the leading guy on a team. Not really in the NBA, but in Europe, he was one of the best players on, I believe he was on the Croatian national team. I could be wrong on that one. I don't want to mess that up too much, but I think he was on the Croatian national team. He was one of the best players on that team. I mean, he just knows what it is to like to be the top guy on a team and have to be the kind of the offensive focal point. And so maybe that can benefit him here. I mean, I get Miami is not, you know, the defenders. I just watching the game. I mean, I don't know Miami's defensive rank. I'm trying to remember what it is, but just watching Miami, their defense was not very good on Bogut. I mean, they just let him kind of slip around. They didn't bump him. They didn't check him. They just let him go. Defensive rating wise, I guess Miami is sixth in defense. I mean, and I get they held just 95 points, so that's still impressive. But the way they guarded Bojan was just kind of, it befuddled me because I couldn't figure out whether it was Bojan was just getting open and doing great things, or it was the defense just kind of said, oh, we'll let him kind of be the guy. But like, if you're looking at the Pacers roster, your whole defense would be built around either stopping Bojan or Turner. They didn't really do either of that. You know, Turner was 5 of 10, which is a pretty solid night. Maybe it was just one of those nights for Bojan where he just was red hot and you couldn't stop. Maybe it's the start. Maybe he can kind of continue this for a few games because they need somebody to be a 25-point to 30-point game scorer every night to fill in for Vic. They need one of these guys to step up. And the most likely options, obviously, are Bojan, then Turner, then I would say Evans, and then Sabonis, or maybe Sabonis, then Evans, those kind of guys to step up. DC, maybe. You know, DC had a really impressive night, too. He's really, I think, been playing really well since kind of Vic's injury. I think he had to adjust at least a couple games. He was kind of trying to figure out, you know, he now kind of, as the offensive caretaker is the right way to put it, I guess, he has to figure out how he was going to get his shots in an efficient way now that Vic was hurt. But if you look at his stats basically since the Memphis game, pull him up. I mean, he had that one pretty miserable game, but he, besides that, he's shooting 50, 61, and 93. I know there's not a ton of sample size. I mean, that's a 5-game sample size. Except for that really bad game against Washington, he's been really solid. You know, 16, 18, 20, and 3 of the last 5 games. I mean, that's just, you know, and 10 assists, obviously, against Orlando. I think he's maybe starting to figure out his role once again. I mean, that was the biggest thing is when Vic's injury, the team had to adjust. You know, every guy had to refine their role. I mean, I think like putting Joseph back in the starting lineup, or putting not back, but putting into the starting lineup was a huge change for this team in terms of like it kind of solidified because at least you got some of, you know, when you're playing Evans, you got kind of half of it already with the offense and half of his defense. At least with Joseph, you get some of the same defense that you had with Oladipo. So you don't feel like you're on the defensive end is screwed and then offense, you have to figure it out like tonight. You know, the defense is really good, and that's how they got to win games, right? I mean, that's the kind of this that's been this team's mantra all season long was defense is going to win us games. I mean, that's even with Vic, it was like this is the top defense. That's how they're going to win most of their games is by holding teams to under 100 points and scoring 100 points. I mean, that's kind of the style. Other guys, look at, I mean, I thought the bench was pretty crap tonight and was pretty poor. I mean, all that kind of leads back to Sabonis, was 1 of 7, and I still can't figure out what Sabonis, whether it's he's struggling or whether he's being put in the situation where he has to play with these guys who don't know how to space the floor super well with Holiday and Sumner and Leaf who really don't know how to play with him that well. And so he's kind of being screwed and the defenses are just kind of double, triple teaming him, or it's just him struggling. Because he's now struggled for a good stretch here. I mean, his struggles really didn't just start with Vic's injury. His struggles go way back. But yeah, it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, you know, there's never just one thing is the reason a guy is playing a certain way. But it seems like he has been the biggest, he's been hurt the most by Vic's injury in a sense that he is playing with, you know, because you have to bump up a guy to start a lineup, he's playing with lesser talent, and that's not letting him, it's kind of exposing his flaws, I guess, when he can be double-teamed, you know, some of his offensive flaws where he, you know, and some of his shots, though, I mean, they should go in. So, like, I mean, I would say his struggles probably started against Philly about 2 weeks ago. You know, if you take his like last 9 games, give or take, it's like 9.8 points, 7 rebounds, but 45, 50, and 62 shooting. This is a guy who on the year, I think, was shooting 65%, give or take. I mean, it's probably way down now. So on the season, he's now at 59, but at some point he was in the high 60s, or the mid 60s at least, in terms of shooting percentage. So he just has struggled, and maybe this is a slump for him. You know, he had a really high start to the season, and maybe he's coming back down to earth a few games, and maybe he'll figure it out. I don't know. And it's just hard, I think, going to be hard for him going forward, because playing with so many young players, playing with Holiday, Sumner, and Leaf, I mean, those are 3 guys who are, I consider, all rookies, because really Leaf played, what, 9-10 games last year? Maybe a little more than that, but barely played any minutes. I mean, these are 3 guys who don't have any NBA experience, and Sabonis is not like a kind of guy you need He needs another kind of guard to play off of him. He needs like a Corey Joseph, and he needs, you know, he really benefits from Corey Joseph and Tyreek Evans. So, you know, I wonder at some point, I get they want to play their young guys, and I think they should. But you wonder if in like a playoff moment they decide to shrink to a 7-man rotation or 8. I mean, I guess I'm still trying to figure out the value of playing Leaf. I think they want to figure out Leaf is good, but I just don't think Leaf is very good. And you saw they only played 5 minutes tonight. In Sumner, I get you want to have kind of a leash with Sumner, but I think he hasn't really shown you anything yet that's like, oh, we're really impressed by this guy being, you know, to be in the future of this team, maybe. I mean, that's, I mean, if you look at Sumner's like basically 4 or 5 games, you're looking at a total of, ooh, give or take 15 points. Total 15 points, shooting about 25%, not a single three made. Like, I don't know if Sumner is, I mean, is Sumner being put in an impossible situation to succeed? Because that could be it. Or is Sumner just not very good? And we've all kind of thought, oh, well, we bought into kind of the hype of he was good in the, what was he good? He had athleticism from playing at Xavier. He had all those videos. He overcame the injury. Did he play well in Summer League? I can't remember at this point if he played well in Summer League. But that could be it. I get you want to play Sumner a little longer and see what you have in there. But I guess at some point, you got to think that he's just isn't worth being in rotation. At least Holiday at times has shown flashes. I'm not sure I've seen anything from Sumner yet. Other players to really note, you know, you had Turner had a pretty decent game, obviously. 14 points. You had Thad, who had a pretty decent game with 11. Again, I mean, like I said at the beginning, it's really going to be on the top six. And once Evans gets back to the top seven, and really probably even just the top five of Turner, Bojan, Thad, Collinson, Joseph, to play 32 to 38 minutes a night and just kind of carry, put these team on the back and carry them. Because the goal right now, right, is just get in the playoffs. I mean, I get they're securely in at a 4 seed, and but they have a tough schedule. They play a lot of tough teams, and the goal is to get into the playoffs. And I get you might not win, but just get the playoffs and maybe get some young guys more experience in big games. I mean, you know, it doesn't hurt if Holiday plays in a playoff game. You know, it only can help him in the long run. So that's kind of the goal, I guess, right now, unless you make a trade, which I'll talk about next. I'll take a quick break, and then I'll talk about the downhill trade effects of Anthony Davis. All right, welcome back into the Locked On Pacers podcast. So, obviously, news about a week old. I haven't really got around to talk about it yet, just because, I don't know, we did a lot of podcasts this week on other Pacers stuff, but Anthony Davis essentially said he wanted out of New Orleans. You know, his agent said that, I guess. He got $50,000. Lakers are the odds-on favorite to get him. It's where he wants to be, it sounds like. Worth noting that he's got basically this year and the next year contract, $27 million, and he's a free agent. He'll probably get whatever if he's not on New Orleans, he can't get the DNE, the Designated Player Extension, DPE, is that what it's called? Designated Player Extension, but he can get a 5-year, 200 max, which he'll get wherever he is, as long as he's traded and have his bird rights. But the worst thing part of this whole thing is that the other parts of New Orleans. So New Orleans has some assets. I mean, they have some guys who are worth it. They've got Jrue Holiday. They've got Julius Randle, who'll probably be a free agent, but two guys who would not look terrible in a Pacer uniform. I mean, outside that, maybe you could talk yourself into, you know, I think Mirotić would be a free agent. He could be worth trading to. The problem with the Pacers right now is that they don't. The only guy that has on a contract that's longer than past this year is Holiday, and so that's where I think is where he should start. And Holiday is making $25 million this year. If they trade Davis, it'll probably be in the... So I don't expect Holiday to be traded right now. It would be a summer thing. So Holiday's the guy the Patriots have coveted for a while. When he was a free agent last time, they made him an offer, or tried to make him an offer, but they ended up re-signing with the Pelicans. He's a pretty good age. He is 28 years old. He has 3 more years on his contract. His 3rd year is a player option. I assume he'd pick it up as $27 million. I mean, it'd be rare for a 31-year-old guy not to do that. So you get him kind of still right in the heart of his prime. He's making a good amount of money, but not, you know, Mike Conley, ridiculous 30-year-old kind of money. He's making good money for a guy who's a really good player. I mean, this guy was a first-team all-defense last year. I think he's a really good player. I mean, he can do a lot of things as a point guard and a 2-guard, and he can play really well off the ball at times, but he also can be your point guard, and he can play really well with a guy like Vic, I think, honestly. So let's say the Pelicans trade Davis, which they'll probably do this summer. And so if they really commit to the full rebuild, you gotta, you know, it's about prying away Holiday, right? So the thing with Holiday is you have two options for getting him. One is obviously just giving up assets and expirings and trying to take on his money or using your cap space, whatever it is, because you're gonna have a lot of cap space next summer. And you know, maybe saying like trading brothers for brothers. I mean, that's probably the first move. So let's say they wait till the summer stuff, $60 million in cap space, give or take. They'll have $60 million. Yeah. They have $60 million in salary, so they'll have about $48 million in cap space. Sorry, mixed that up. Obviously, they have to re-sign some guys. So, you know, the only guys they have in the roster, they have essentially four rotation guys: Oladipo, McDermott, Turner, Sabonis, Holiday, are like the five guys that I, you know, that are in the rotation. They need, you know, they need another point guard. They need a small forward and a power forward. They need those three at least. Those are probably, you know, so they have $48 million spent on those three kind of guys. What they could do with just trading for Holiday straight up and get his $26 million in salary would be to give up, you know, I'd say Holiday. You might have to give up Sabonis. I would try not to give up Sabonis, clearly, but you might have to give up Aaron Holiday, the brother. Maybe you give up a future first along with that. Maybe give up two future first round picks or, you know, something like that. You know, I hesitate to say you should trade Sabonis. But Holiday's a really good player, and, you know, I do think you're wasting away some of Sabonis' potential being on the bench. And if he can't play power forward to Turner, I don't know what the goal is of having him. So maybe the move is Holiday, Sabonis, and a future first, and that gets you him with the cap space. And that's probably selling a little high, but I would think about doing that kind of move. And then you have to obviously kind of bring back maybe Thad or something like that, you probably need to bring back Thad on that kind of move, or at least a power forward equivalent to Thad, which is probably just keep Thad. And then you probably also need to figure out how to get another center. But you could probably figure that out. You could probably bring in a backup center or something like that, where you go small. You probably need to bring back, I guess you probably bring back Bojan too in that situation. You know, I mean, I think right now in my mind, so they have $60 million committed, that Bojan's back at probably 15, 12 to 15. So mark that down at 75. And then you throw in Drew Holiday, and you subtract, you had 26, but subtract 5 for Sabonis and Holiday, so it gets you to 95. That leaves you about 13 in space to go pay for Thad. And then you get Thad for 10, and basically you're looking at a lineup of like Oladipo, Thad, Drew, Bojan, Turner, and then off the bench, you're kind of weak. I mean, you're off the bench. I don't even know who you have off the bench at this point. And then you have Bedard off the bench, so you need to add two more rotation guys probably. And so maybe you have to get one of that on the qualifying or the room exception. Sorry, one of those moves and something else. I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking. That's kind of a thought. And maybe your first round pick this year. That's maybe your 8-9 rotation. Is that enough? I don't know. That might be too much. You know, you might not have enough room for that kind of move. You'd like to get Holiday, just giving up a Holiday for Holiday swap and future first round picks. And the way you could do that, so a Holiday for Holiday swap with future first-round picks, is by taking on a contract. So Solomon Hill's got a pretty shitty contract, if I had to say so, obviously. Not a great contract on Solomon Hill. He will make $13 million on the last year of his deal next year. I believe he's back to playing. I don't exactly know. I know he was hurt for a little while. He really hasn't played a ton of minutes. I mean, he played 12 games last year. His first year once he played 80, and he was not very good, 38, 35 shooting. I mean, this is a guy who flamed out as a Pacer, flamed out his first 3 years as a Pacer, then got him sudden motivational kick once Larry Bird didn't pick up his option, played really well for 30 games, and then essentially has kind of reverted back to what he was, but got paid like he was a guy who played, who at 30 pitchers, like a full 2-year stretch. I mean, he got paid a 4-year, $15 million contract, if I remember right. Solomon Hill has been back for 6 games now. He's averaging 4 points, 2 rebounds on 35. I mean, you really don't want Solomon Hill, but if you could get Solomon Hill without giving up Sabonis, that might be worth the trade. So if you do the Solomon Hill thing, the problem is that you probably sacrifice bringing back Thad or Bones. You can get Thad really cheap. So let's say the trade is, because you have the cap space, you could take on all $39 million and you send back the $2 million of Aaron Holiday and a future first-round pick. Let's say that's the move. Holiday and a first round for Holiday and Solomon Hill. Now you're at $99 million. Your rotation is Oladipo, Drew Holiday, Miles Turner, Sabonis, McDermott, That's it. And so now you've got $9 million in space to go get three guys. See, and I mean, again, I don't know how the cap economics works there. It's still kind of iffy. I mean, the problem is the ideal move is to get Holiday without taking on Solomon Hill and giving him some bonus, but maybe that isn't enough. But maybe if you sacrifice, you know, like three first-round picks, you could do it. So that's kind of a move I think is kind of interesting. I don't know if it's, you know, the Jrue Holiday move is, it's hard to figure out how they keep, you know, in an ideal world, you'd want a lineup of Holiday, Jrue Holiday, Bojan, Thad, Turner, Sabonis, some point guard off the bench, and Aaron Holiday. I mean, maybe not Holiday, but some point guard off the bench and McDermott. I mean, that's the ideal. That's the 8-man rotation you find ideal. You could find ideal give your team a real shot to win in the playoffs. That's the ideal move. But I don't know how you make that move. Maybe give up three first-round picks, which is risky for a guy like Jrue Holiday, but maybe you do it because you really think that he's the missing piece to this team competing for an NBA championship. And truly, I mean, if you're trying to make a move to say, hey, Oladipo, we want to re-sign you and keep you, blah, 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 that might be the move to make. Just a thought. I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, then you're going to get in the luxury tax at some point because you're going to re-sign Sabonis to a bigger deal. So, you know, maybe it is worth trading Sabonis because you don't want to pay him the bigger contract. But then you have to figure out how to replace him because, you know, the Pelicans don't have a ton of, you know, great depth. Let's put it that way. They don't have a ton of, like, you know, guys you'd want to throw in and add to the kind of depth of them. And the other move that you can look at for the Pelicans, really it's kind of two, is one is Mirotić and one is Julius Randle. So Randle has an option for next year that I would doubt he'd pick up, assuming he thinks he can get the MLE again next year at the minimum. It might be worth making a move for Randle now if you could somehow flip. I think the move I looked in my, you know, if they really just don't want him, is you flip Leaf, EK, and O'Quinn for him and see if they would do that. I don't really know. I guess the only way the Pelicans might do it is if they talk themselves into Leaf and maybe throw in a second rounder. And what you do, you get Randle, and then you hope you can re-sign Randle or use him as kind of insurance. So then you're kind of looking at a lineup of, like, you know, Oladipo, Bojan, and, you know, Randle instead of Young. That's maybe the idea there. Or, you know, adding Randle not too be good just for a playoff run. I think it's clear the Pacers need, like, another guy in the rotation to be really helpful, another quality NBA player. And Randle might be kind of the guy for that. He's a decent player. You could get him here. I mean, I'd say a second-round pick, Leaf, EK, and Al Quinn, you're pretty much giving up nothing of super value to you, and you're getting a guy who can maybe play in your rotation in the playoffs and help you guys win a few more games and make the playoffs. That's the goal. And Mirotić is the only reason I add him on this list. It's not for trade, but the fact that he probably won't re-sign with New Orleans, and maybe you go out and give him a big deal. I mean, he's kind of the stretch four Pacers have been salivating about for years. Maybe he's your replacement to Thaddeus Young. Maybe you go out and give him a, you know, 3 years, 54, something more than, you know, you overpay because, you know, that's the Indiana price. You overpay him, but you get your stretch four. That's the other way I can see him hedging the Pacers. Besides that, I don't see a ton of other talent laying out there for the Pelicans. That's kind of why Anthony Davis is leaving, because essentially they have four, maybe five guys that are worth taking on. But, yeah, I mean, I do think the Davis is interesting. I don't think he'll get traded before the trade deadline. I think he'll be after. But after that, you know, everything could be up for grabs for this Pelicans team. I mean, every player on this team that's not, you know, that's above 3 years of service in the NBA is up for grabs. Make sure to follow our podcast on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Make sure to follow me at FreedomAdam5, my co-host Tony East at T East NBA. We'll be back on actually Monday, so that's tomorrow, after Triple Sunday, with a weekly podcast, of course. And we'll be back, of course, later in the week for our five shows a week, so look forward to that. That is all for this Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, have a great rest of your day.